Emirates makes the biggest civil aircraft order in history at the Dubai Air Show. NATCA says Jacksonville Center went down for 50 minutes and the FAA made it worse. And, no surprise, American Airlines rejects the first contract proposal from its pilots. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, November 12th, 2007. We were all set to tell you today how U.S. foreign policy might hurt Boeing's sales against Airbus at the Dubai Air Show. Well, that story has just moved out of the hypothetical. Emirates announced on Sunday another historic civil aviation aircraft order, signing contracts for 120 Airbus A350s, 11 more A380s, and 12 Boeing 777-300ERs, worth an estimated total of $34.9 billion at list prices. The agreement with Airbus includes firm orders for 50 A350-900s and 20 A350-1000s, plus options for 50 more of the 900 model. Deliveries of the A350s to Emirates is projected for 2014. Emirates also firmed up orders on the 8 A380s, for which it had signed letters of intent earlier this year, and placed firm orders for an additional 3 of the double-decker aircraft, bringing its total firm order for the A380 to 58 aircraft. The contract with Boeing is a table scrap by comparison, 12 firm orders for 777-300ERs, valued at $3.2 billion. This order means Emirates is waiting for a total of 57 Boeing 777s now, and is set to become the world's largest 777 operator in the next few years. The orders come as Emirates reports growth and demand exceeding its most optimistic projections. Emirates serves 97 cities in 61 countries, including 3 daily flights from New York's JFK to Dubai. In its 19-year history, the company says annual growth has never fallen below 20%. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association tells ANN Jacksonville Center suffered a 50-minute communications outage on Friday afternoon, during which controllers in most of the facility lost the ability to talk to pilots or even see aircraft on their scopes. The outage also caused a number of delays involving aircraft headed to and from the lower southeastern U.S., including Florida. The outage, which NATCA believes was caused by human error at the local Jacksonville area office of a major telecommunications company that provides the infrastructure to the FAA, began at about 12:40 p.m. Eastern Time. Jacksonville Center's NATCA facility representative, Dave Cook, said the facility lost 9 of its 16 radar sites and half of its radio frequencies. He added that the FAA prohibits controllers from having cell phones in the control room, severely limiting communications to other air traffic control facilities to notify them of aircraft headed to and from their airspace. Cook said it does not appear that any incidents of losses of minimum separation occurred during the outage. In a move unlikely to surprise anyone, executives at American Airlines have rejected a contract proposal offered by the Allied Pilots Association, saying it would increase the airline's costs by over $1.4 billion a year. The airline calls the increases demanded unsustainable. Union spokesman Carl Schricker called American's statements, quote, "tired rhetoric that tries to make everyone forget what they've done with senior executive compensation and how they basically sold labor a bill of goods with pull together, win together," unquote. Conversely, the union said no to American's plans to purchase 25 70-seat Bombardier CRJ regional jets for its regional subsidiary, American Eagle. The jets would have been flown by pilots at the regional carrier who are represented by the Airline Pilots Association, not the APA. Also vetoed was an agreement between those two unions, outlining so-called flow-through procedures for American Eagle pilots to move up to American's mainline service. APA leaders have promised members a hard line in negotiations, predicting, quote, "interesting times in American Airlines," unquote. The Chicago Tribune reported Saturday that the FAA will keep its caps on flights in and out of Chicago O'Hare in effect for another year. The limits were imposed 3 years ago when O'Hare ranked last in on-time performance. The paper quoted FAA officials as saying the caps will be lifted in November of 2008, when O'Hare is scheduled to open a new runway. City officials have bristled under the caps, protesting their economic impact. And it's hard to say they've achieved much. O'Hare still ranks last in on-time departure performance among the 32 busiest U.S. airports. Up next on ANN, Civil Air Patrol loses two career officers. The Swiss High Court says a Russian assassin will go free. And a small plane crash claims the life of a former Vietnam POW. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with a sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply Canal tips composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 12, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. Representatives with the Civil Air Patrol tell ANN two highly regarded members, Colonel Edwin W. Lewis, Jr., Director of Operations for CAP's Pacific Region, and Colonel Dion E. DeCamp, Commander of CAP's Nevada Wing, died Thursday evening when their CAP Cessna 182 impacted mountainous terrain south of Las Vegas. Lewis had traveled to Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas to drop off a CAP airplane to be used in an air show display. He and DeCamp were apparently en route to Rosemont, California, Lewis's hometown. Lewis and DeCamp had enjoyed long and distinguished careers, both in the U.S. Air Force and the Civil Air Patrol, which is the official auxiliary of the Air Force. Most recently, both men were involved actively in the search for legendary American aviator Steve Fawcett. NTSB is investigating. The Swiss Federal Tribunal, Switzerland's highest court, cleared the way on Thursday for release of a Russian convicted of killing an employee of Swiss air traffic control company SkyGuide. Vitaly Kaliyev's wife and two children died in the 2002 collision of a Bashkirian Airlines jetliner and a DHL cargo jet over southern Germany. That airliner was filled with Russian schoolchildren on a holiday trip to Spain. Peter Nielsen was the SkyGuide controller on duty at the time. Kaliyev did not dispute that he killed Nielsen in February of 2004, but said he remembered nothing about it. His case had evoked much sympathy back in Russia. Four SkyGuide managers were convicted of negligent homicide in that crash just this past September. Kaliyev was ordered released for good behavior after serving more than two-thirds of his eight-year sentence. The tribunal's decision on Thursday denied the prosecution's final avenue of appeal to have the full sentence enforced. A 74-year-old retired Navy captain who spent 7 years as a POW after being shot down in his F-8 over Vietnam is one of three victims of an aircraft accident Friday in California's Central Valley. Cole Black was on his way home to California after speaking of his POW experiences to students in Oregon. Black survived the infamous Hanoi Hilton and retired from the Navy in 1986. He was riding in a Piper 602P Aerostar with Oregon restaurateur Bruce Klein and a retired schoolteacher named Sally Wilson. All three died when the plane crashed in an orange grove in a rural area near Delano, California. The NTSB will investigate. An internal inquiry into the deaths of 14 people in an explosion in the skies over Afghanistan last year will reportedly rip the UK's Ministry of Defense for shortcomings in procurement, training, and maintenance. The Observer reports the explosion of the British Nimrod spy plane 14 months ago will be blamed on a fuel leak, and the report will cite concerns over similar fuel system leaks dating back 8 years without action by the MOD. The paper says the forthcoming report will blast the ministry for failing to address a low standard of workmanship, inadequate training of mechanics, and use of improper equipment and sealants. In addition, the 36-page report is said to point out that the Nimrod, which exploded, was considerably older than the useful life called for in its original specs. Just days ago, another Nimrod being refueled over Afghanistan began spraying fuel into an empty bomb bay. The MOD says it has taken the precaution of ceasing mid-air refueling of the planes for the time being. Still ahead, the second production Kodiak turboprop flies. NASA prepares for the launch of Atlantis. And more space-related development comes to New Mexico. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, November 12, 2007. I'm Paul Platt. Quest Aircraft told ANN on Friday of the successful first flight of serial number 002, the second production Kodiak turboprop. The aircraft, which will be delivered to the customer early next month, flew for about an hour on Tuesday last week. Paul Schaller, Quest Aircraft's president and CEO, called the flight another milestone. Quote, "This has been a remarkable year for Quest, and we couldn't have come this far without a lot of hard work and dedication on the part of everyone involved." Unquote. The Kodiak received FAA type certification on May 30th. Quest says it continues to work with the FAA to achieve its production certificate. The company reports a 3-year order backlog, with interest from such market segments as personal use, Part 135, government, and humanitarian organizations. The aluminum Kodiak sports a Pratt & Whitney PT6 turbine engine, Garmin G1000 panel, is capable of working off floats without structural upgrades, and can land on unimproved surfaces. Quest says the Kodiak can take off in under 700 feet at full gross takeoff weight of 6,750 pounds with a useful load of 3,450 and climb at over 1,700 feet per minute. NASA moved the space shuttle Atlantis to its launch pad at Kennedy Space Center on Saturday. It's in preparation for a mission scheduled for launch on December 6th. Atlantis will be delivering the Columbus module to the International Space Station. Columbus is a science laboratory, a collaboration among several European countries. The mission to install it will include participation by European astronauts Hans Schlegel of Germany and Leopold Aerts of France. Compared to the tight schedule for the launch of the shuttle Discovery last month, the countdown for Atlantis will be more manageable. But there is some question whether the International Space Station can be prepared for the arrival of the Columbus module. Friday, Station Commander Peggy Whitson and Flight Engineer Yuri Melenchenko conducted a spacewalk to prepare for moving the Harmony module, delivered by Discovery last week, into position to receive Columbus next month. That spacewalk was originally planned to happen while Discovery was still docked, but repairs to a torn solar panel took priority. NASA says two more spacewalks will be needed to complete the work, but remains confident Atlantis can launch on time. New Mexico has been in the news recently for its pivotal role in the development of commercial space travel, but the state still figures in NASA's future as well. The agency announced last week it will break ground for a new test launch pad at the U.S. Army's White Sands Missile Range between Alamogordo and Las Cruces. Completion is expected in time for testing related to the development of the Orion spacecraft to begin in September of next year. Orion is the craft we'll use to send astronauts back to the moon and eventually on to Mars. The tests next fall will involve Orion's launch abort system. White Sands is the biggest military installation in the U.S., with an area 3 times that of the state of Rhode Island. And finally, Congress wants to know, Why are we screwing around with space stations and Mars missions when there are asteroids heading toward Earth? After all, there's a 1 in 45,000 chance that the asteroid Apophis could strike the Earth in the year 2036. And NASA has said funding for the Arecibo Radio Telescope in Puerto Rico could end in 2011. NASA replies that the risk of an asteroid colliding with Earth is too small to warrant diverting resources from more important programs, and the near-Earth object detection work currently done at Arecibo can be picked up by smaller radio telescopes. NASA says it tracks only objects big enough to cause a planetary disaster, and if Congress wants smaller stuff tracked, it needs to pony up the necessary money. Gee, up until now it's been just a metaphor, but perhaps we are about to see if Congress thinks the sky is literally falling. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, in our weekly visit with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, we'll expand last week's topic of icing conditions with a discussion of Bob's sometimes controversial views on training for icing. And we'll invite your email in response. And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.